Well, welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the new GTLD subsequent procedures subteam, or I'm sorry, work truck. Subsequent procedures working group call on the 17th of June, 2019 at 1500 UTC. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Zoom room. So if you're only on the phone bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now so we can note for attendance?
Lita from Canada, Lita Hukayan from Canada.
Great, thank you so much. We will go ahead and note that. And as a reminder to all participants, to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. Also, as a friendly reminder, to view the documents being shared during the meeting today, please direct yourself to the top of the shared screen, and you will see an option that says View Options. Please click on the drop-down arrow, and you will then direct yourself between Julie Hedlund and Steve Chan's documents. With this, I'll hand the meeting back over to Jeff Newman. Please begin.
Thank you, Michelle. And I sometimes mess up on which meeting I'm attending as well, so no worries. No worries there. I know we're all attending lots of different meetings. Okay, I'm noticing, Steve, do we have a timer up there so we can continue that from last week? I think that ended up working. So if we can get that in place, that would be fantastic. Okay, so just to review the agenda while that's going on, we are going to get started on the next topic, at least next topic, if not hopefully get through a couple different topics, all dealing with global public interest and freedom of expression. Then we will go into a discussion on what's planned for the ICANN 65 session, specifically the third and fourth sessions, which are reserved for the non-Work Track 5, or the other way to say it is Work Track 5 has the sessions that are labeled sub-pro session 1 and sub-pro session 2. We, the rest of the group, will have sessions 3 and 4. We'll talk more about that. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit again about the post-ICANN work plan. So with that said, let me first ask to see if there is any of the, or any questions on the agenda. Okay, not seeing any hands raised. Let me ask if there's any updates to the statements, anyone's statement of interest. Great, okay. Then as the document are being switched over to Steve's computer, there we go, there's the timer. Thanks, Steve. I just saw your note in the chat that it's on your screen, great. Okay, so today we're starting the discussion on the global public interest, and I know this has come up on a number of occasions, but it's a very difficult subject because obviously global public interest can mean a lot of different things, and in many different contexts. We've tried to, through the community comment too, the initial report, and then through the public comment analysis, try to limit the discussions of the global public interest to a few general areas without delving into how broadly that term could be used. In addition, we also tried initially to come up with a definition, and I will say that we failed miserably because, as all other efforts have, there's really no way to come up with a concrete definition of what global public interest means. As I think a number of people have pointed out on these calls previously, the GAC has tried it, the ICANN board has tried it, the staff tried initiating a process that went on for a number of years to try and come up with a concrete definition. And essentially, we just have what's in the ICANN bylaws. And that's not much of a concrete definition, but it's kind of a high level overview of responsibility. So in this context, in the new GTLD context, when we talk about public interest, it's generally in line with things like GAC advice, GAC early warnings, the public interest commitments, which were an add-on after the last 2012 round had started. And then also we talk about it in the form of objections as well occasionally. But I suppose it could come up with a number of other situations. But from our perspective, we have limited it to these areas. And I'm noticing a comment from Avery, which says the ICANN board is still trying. They haven't given up on defining the term public interest, global public interest. And as Avery says, I guess doing it within context is the key. So we're going to attempt to tackle this subject within the context of new GTLDs. So I think the link to this document is or should be posted somewhere. I'm going to be looking at the Zoom document, but going back and forth to the Google Sheet as well. Hopefully that link, there we go. Thanks, Emily. If everyone who's not speaking can mute, that would be fantastic. Okay, so what are the policy goals that we've kind of taken from the various different comment periods and documents? So we want to develop policy that's consistent with ICANN's core values under Article 1, Section 1.2b2, which addresses public interest. And then the other policy goal, or what we're trying to accomplish, is to the extent that mandatory and or voluntary picks as public interest commitments are carried forward into the subsequent rounds or procedures, that we need to codify it in policy. The reason we say that is because in the 2008 original GNSO policy as approved by the board, and even in the initial, or I should say the final guidebook, that came out in 2012, there's no reference to public interest commitments. This was a creation that came, I believe, in 2013, although someone might correct me on that date, but it came about in response to GAC early warnings and what the organization and what we could do to potentially address those early warnings, and then was subsequently modified later on to deal with other GAC advice that came in the 2012-2013 timeframe. And they are generally codified in specification 11 of the registry agreements. And so there are both mandatory picks, which are in everyone's registry agreement, and then there are voluntary picks that some of the organizations, some of the registry operators agreed to commit to in their agreements that are also documented in that specification 11. So just going to the chat just to make sure I'm keeping up with this. Right, so some of this came about as a result of a GAC letter and advice and all sorts of things. But regardless of how it came into existence, one of our roles is to determine whether these things should become part of the permanent policy or not. So with that said, in looking back at our discussions and the comments that we've received during the various comment periods, we believe that there's a high level of agreement to codify the current implementation of the mandatory public interest commitments. And most of the commenters that responded believe that there does not need to be additional mandatory public interest commitments. So just to refresh everyone's recollection, as I am myself turning to what these mandatory picks are in specification 11. There is one of them that pertains to, actually, let me just go in order. So in specification 11, we have the first one, which is only using ICANN accredited registrars that are party to the registrar accreditation agreement approved by the ICANN Board of Directors on June 27, 2013 in registering domain names. And then a list of the registrars are maintained by ICANN. So that was one of them. The second one is that the registry operator will operate the registry for the TLD in compliance with all commitments, statements of intent, and business plans stated in the following sections of the registry operator's application to ICANN for the TLD. And it goes on to just talk about that it's enforceable through the PIC DRP. Registry operator shall comply with the PIC DRP, and that the registry agrees to implement and adhere to any remedies imposed by ICANN, and then cites a section of the registry agreement. Those are the first two. The third mandatory PIC has several subparts. The first part, 3A, deals with the public interest commitment of including certain things in their registry registrar agreement. The second one has to do with a 3B, which many registries are very familiar with now, as there was just an audit conducted on all registries on the technical analysis to assess whether domains in the TLD are being used to perpetrate security threats, and goes on to define those. And those reports need to be maintained for a certain period of time. The part C is that registries will operate in a transparent manner consistent with principles of openness and non-discrimination by establishing, publishing, and adhering to clear registration policies. And the final one is one that we'll actually be talking about separately and during a separate conversation, and that's the concept of the closed generic, essentially saying that registry operator of a generic string TLD may not impose eligibility criteria for registering names in the TLD that limit registrations exclusively to a single person or entity or their affiliates, and then it goes on to define a generic string. So I'm going to ask that we not go into that last public interest commitment. And in fact, a lot of these will talk about the substance during separate conversations. So the real point of this is to discuss the high level notion of PICs and whether we should put them into or code them into our policy. So that's just an update of the PICs, the mandatory, and the voluntary ones are all of the ones that were mentioned in other registry agreements after that. But there are some PICs which were added to registries that were deemed to be category one, which were the regulated or sensitive strings. Those are PICs as well that have been added to some agreements. Okay, we have a hand up from Christopher. And so we've only gone through the first high level agreement. We'll go through the others after Christopher, please.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Christopher Wilkinson for the record. Thank you, Jeff, for that introduction. The fact that PICs were not foreseen in the 2012 AGM, AGP, whatever, does tend to confirm what I've said before, that the 2012 exercise was lacking in certain respects. But I don't want to go back into that. Obviously, I agree that PICs should be carried forward as a general policy. However, this is not an exclusive or overall concept of the global public interest. There are several dimensions to the global public interest which can easily be identified, which would not be covered by PICs at the level of the registry. They relate to the global public interest in this PDP and in ICRAN as a whole. I will not claim to identify global public interest positively for the whole world. I'm very glad that as Avery has pointed out, that the board is looking into this. But allow me to say that I know what is something that is against the global public interest when you see it. And I just want to stress three aspects. The first is jurisdiction and incorporation. It is in the global public interest, especially with geographical names, that the registry incorporates in the domain, in the jurisdiction that they intend to do business with. Absent that requirement, we would go back to the abuses in 2012 where registries were incorporated in tax havens.
Okay, Christopher, can you, yes. This is Jeff, can you just get to, I know that I'm looking at the timer, can you just list the other two briefly and then we can go on and discuss?
Well, I would quickly register languages and IDN, which are represented in this work, and specifically the responsibility of ICANN to create the conditions of competition for open entry and certainly not permit the accumulation and the concentration of registries in individual companies. This obviously we can go into in greater detail, and as I have done so previously in discussions, but I just want to make quite clear that the PICs are not the end of the story and the global public interest. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Christopher. Just to note those three, I think we have Julie's got them, we certainly have them documented. Let me go to Maxime.
Maxime Alzoba, for the record. Actually, for the position of GeoTLDs, I would definitely recommend to ask them. But to clarify a bit situation, the current situation where the potential registry for GeoTLD has to have a letter, to obtain a letter of support or non-objection from the local government in different countries, cities and regions regulate differently. But still, I am not sure that we are in position to dictate what local governments can and cannot do. I would not recommend to go there. And I think that the current situation with the letters of support and non-objection are perfectly normal. And for registries, for GeoTLDs, to have good relations with the local government is a must. So I don't think it needs to be regulated. Thanks.
Thanks, Maxim. Christopher, did you want to do a short reply there?
Sorry, I seem to still have my hand up. I tried to put it down, but Maxim is right. But for that to work, my point about jurisdiction of incorporation of the registries concerned is crucial. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Maxime and Christopher. So moving on to the second high-level agreement from looking at the comments. Most of the commenters wanted to or were in favor of continuing with the concept of the voluntary PICs to allow applicants to commit to additional voluntary PICs in response to public comments, GAC early warnings, and or GAC advice. Most commenters indicated that such voluntary picks should be allowed, even if they change the nature of the original application. That last sentence is important because, if you recall, there was a strict rule in the last round that did not allow any changes to be made to the, or material changes to be made to an application, regardless of whether it was in response to any of these things like public comments or GAC advice. And that created a lot of consternation and issues with ICANN.org trying to figure out how we could take into consideration those comments and advice, but still abide by the rule that said there can't be any changes. So this seems to, not seems to, this does support the notion of allowing these types of changes and as an exception to the no material changes to the application rule. Okay, going on to the third bullet there. There was support for most commenters that when a voluntary pick is made, the applicant must set forth if it's meant to be limited in time, duration, and or scope, such that the pick can be adequately reviewed by ICANN, by an existing objector if there is one, and or the GAC if the voluntary pick was in response to a GAC advice or an early warning. So this is basically saying that you can change the nature of the original application as in the bullet before, but it really needs to provide then other things that flow from that, including objections, need to be able to consider those picks as well and make sure that it's understood the complete nature and context of the pick. So I did see Jamie's hand up.
Yeah, Jeff, sorry. Jamie Baxter for the record. I believe we've had this discussion in the past. Going back to the last point, I just wanted to reiterate and remind everyone that during the 2012 round, community applicants could change absolutely zero portion of their application, perhaps with the exception of business addresses and things like that. But I just want to reiterate that if this is what the policy recommendation is going towards, is there going to be a clear distinction about whether this also applies to community applicants so that it is not turned into a negative later on and with an assumption that, oh, no, no, it never included community applicants when we say that everybody can make changes to their application. So is there some clarity that can be pointed out or some notes that can be added to this to make sure that that is absolutely clear going forward? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. We can absolutely add some clarity that this is intended to be for all applications regardless of the type of application. But let me just make sure that there's no objection, at least on this call, to making that clarification. So is there anyone on this call that would have any issues with clarifying that this applies to all applications and not to the exclusion of any particular type? All right, I'm not seeing any objection, so we will make that clarification. Donna, please.
Thanks, Jeff. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, Donna, sorry, it takes me a second to get off and on mute. Yes.
Okay, great. So just to clarify, Jamie, the point that you're making is that the difference in categories that were identified by the GAC. So is that the point you were getting at? I think, you know, there's mandatory picks that currently go across all TLDs, and then there's levels. You know, if you're category one safeguard, then this applies. Category two safeguard, something else applies. So are you saying to do away with all of that? I just wanted to clarify what you're saying.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. Jamie here. I think what didn't happen in the 2012 round, but could potentially happen going forward, is that there may be special warnings that go out that apply to community applicants specifically, whether there's a contention set or not. And I think it's just important that everybody equally be able to adjust their application in order to clear any advice or warnings or whatever it might be, so that community applicants aren't specifically crippled in their ability to move forward in the process. Again, a lot of this is about unforeseen next opportunities that may come out from any early warnings or advice that is leveled in the next procedures. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Jamie. Donna, does that answer your question?
It does. Thanks, Jeff, and it makes sense. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Looking at the chat, Justine says she can't see any reason to discriminate. So that seems like it's support for the point Jamie's making. And then there's still a bunch of discussion, which is great, going on public interest and work that's ongoing. Moving back to bullet point number four, this is actually several different parts, so we'll take one part at a time. The first part is that there was support from most commenters that voluntary picks should be reflected in the registry agreement in specification or something like specification 11. So that's the first part. The second part is that picks can only be changed after public comment. And then the third part is that proposed material changes must take into account comments made by the applicable objector and or the applicable GAC members that issued an early warning, or in the case of GAC advice, the GAC itself. So that's really three kind of different points that were all in this one bullet. So let me ask, I see Donna's hand is raised. I'm not sure if that's new. Donna, is that a new hand? All right, I'm not hearing anything, so I will assume that that's an old hand. Let me go on to the next bullet point. Steve, if we can go to the next screen. So most commenters support providing single registrant TLDs with exemptions and or waivers to mandatory picks included in specification 11.3a and specification 3b. This was a high level agreement from many of the commenters. And just to go back to the registry agreement, 3A was the provision that deals with the inclusion of a provision in the registry registrar agreement that requires registrars to include in their registration agreements a provision prohibiting registered name holders or registrants from distributing malware, abusively operating botnets, etc. The reason why this specification 11.3A, many commenters said that single registrant TLDs didn't necessarily need this one, is because the registry and the registrant are the same entity. So yes, it has to at this point use an accredited registrar, but we're putting something in the registry registrar agreement that prohibits itself from distributing malware, because again, the registry operator and the registrant are the same. It didn't seem to make a lot of sense to a lot of people. And 3B, which is the conducting a technical analysis to assess whether domains are being used for malware, also to a number of commenters didn't necessarily make sense because again, the registry and the registrant are the same entity. So I apologize for the phone ringing in the background. That should go away in about 30 seconds. Let me see if there's any comments. And I see Donna and then Christopher. Although Donna, is that a new hand or old? Nope. Okay, Christopher, please.
Thank you, Christopher Wilkinson, for the record. Allow me, Jeff, to sound totally naive. but it would be very helpful to me if somebody on the call would explain what this is all about. Why on earth would you want a single registrant registry? What is this for? I've read into this a bit over the years, and it baffles me still. Who on earth wants these things and why? Thank you. I'm not against them. I'm just totally incapable of following this debate because it makes no sense to me whatsoever.
Okay, thank you, Christopher. I think as people are putting in the chat, this is a way to, another way to brand TLDs are often called single registrant top-level domains. So there are many examples of brands that have launched, whether it's KPMG, Canon, Barclays, there's a ton of them. So they are single registrant TLDs because they're the only registrant. It's really for their brands and not for third parties to register domain names. So that is generally what single registrant TLDs refer to, but there are examples of other single registrant TLDs as well for organizations that exist. Paul, please.
Thanks, this is Paul McGrady. So just a little bit of history too. In addition to the dot brands, which have settled in nicely with specification 13, there were a significant number of applications in the first round for what became known as closed generics or single registrant registries. And these were applied for by some of the largest companies in the world. And there were business cases for how they were going to use them. So for example, if we just make, hopefully it's fictional, I can't remember every applicant from the last round, but if we had, dot airplane insurance, and there was an airplane insurance company that wanted to have one that was, a Cleveland.airplane insurance and Omaha.airplane insurance and things like that, where they could have used that to target specific markets. And there was nothing in the first applicant guidebook that prohibited that. And it was very, very late in the day before some people became upset about the idea. Cynically, I believe they became upset about the idea because they couldn't figure out a way to make money on them if it was a closed system that only required one registrar. And so that's what brought us into the closed generics conundrum. And ultimately, the folks who were against them prevailed. And a lot of applications were withdrawn. And so that's the background on that, Christopher. From my point of view, the big problem with it was that the last applicant guidebook didn't sufficiently deal with it. And we still don't have a real policy on it. We just have the outcome from the fight last time. And I'm not sure that that's, when you have an outcome from a fight, that really is a community developed process. I think it's just the board trying to do whatever it, could in the moment because the community gave them a policy that was incomplete, or the community gave them a policy that was complete and people didn't later on, even though there were multiple opportunities to comment on that policy, nobody spotted the issue or they didn't care about it until later. And so then the policy was reopened and that kind of thing. So, depending on your point of view, I'm sure my 2 minutes are over, but that's the background. Thanks.
Thanks, Paul. Christopher, quick response. And just before you do, we're not going to, at this point, discuss the merits of or what the policy should be with respect to closed generics. That's a whole other topic we have reserved for another day. All we're talking about here is the high-level support that there may be some some exemptions to mandatory picks, including potentially a brand or a single registrant TLD. Christopher, please. Christopher, your hand is up. Is that an old hand?
Sorry, problem of muting. very quickly, Jeff, I know you're pressed for time and so am I. First of all, thank you for your clarification. Secondly, thank Paul for his explanation. All I would say at this stage is that as a realist, I could live with that for pre-existing trademarks. Some people might not. But I would certainly not go with single registrant TLDs in the absence of a pre-existing trademark right. I think we need to be very specific about that, because this is not about, and there are other aspects, this is not about extending trademark rights. We respect trademark rights that have been granted, but the underhand de facto extension of trademark rights through the creation of monopolies in the DNS, no. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Christopher. And like I said, we'll be talking more about the closed generic issue at a later date. Next, and the last high-level agreement was that voluntary picks are an appropriate way to address issues raised by GAC early warnings, public comments, or otherwise flagged by the community. And this, again, is just an affirmation that we should, by policy, codify the notion of voluntary picks. Any questions on any of the high-level agreements? And Paul says that there is a takeaway that we need to make sure we codify these policies and make it clear for what we're going to do in the future. Okay. Now, there are some outstanding issues, some new ideas or divergence that was expressed, because in not all of the high-level agreements did I say that most or all agreed to this. So we'll go through these and we can decide whether there's anything we should do to address this or not. But on the notion of codifying the existing mandatory picks, Newstar had said that it doesn't support additional mandatory picks, which actually was supported, actually really shouldn't be in this section, because it was most of the commenters said that. ICANN.org said that if they are codified into as policy recommendations, we should include what the categories of strings are, the process and criteria for applied for strings to be put into those categories, and what the contractual obligations are for these categories. So this refers to the distinction between, as the GAC had created several categories, including category one and category two. Category two was the closed generics issue, which we'll talk about at a later date. And category one was the notion of adding picks, whether we call them voluntary or mandatory, to address the sensitive strings, the regulated strings. So to the extent we do that going forward, we should try to make the criteria as specific as we can, so that the organization knows which TLDs will fall into that category one if we decide to continue that. The registry stakeholder group said that there should be a bright line of finality once matters are considered and concluded by the full community, including the GAC. So this refers to the notion that many of the discussions of the GAC and the community just went on for months and in some cases years after the application was submitted and or after it was even evaluated. And so there should be, according to the registry, some sort of way of cutting discussions off and putting some finality on whether the string moves forward and how it moves forward. The NCSG made a comment that says that the PICs encompass intellectual property policing of internet content, which is beyond the scope and mission of ICANN. So although I believe the specific PICs that the NCSG is referring to, although someone can absolutely correct me, are specifically 3A, which deals with requiring registrars to include in their registration agreements a provision prohibiting registered name holders from distributing malware, and then goes on to say trademark or copyright infringement, fraudulent or deceptive practices, counterfeit, etc. So that was a concern from the NCSG, but I'm not sure that it, I'm not sure if it applies to any other picks. Is there anyone from the NCSG call on here that would like to comment? So I see Martin, please.
Hi, can you hear me, guys?
Yes, great, thanks.
Perfect, thank you very much, Jeff. Well, basically, just to expand on that idea, it's not only that pick, it's the idea that we are creating a second way to create policy or policy-like behavior. So it's both the idea that I can might be facilitating the control of content and also the bypassing of the PDP's process and debates. So we are very concerned about this. We do not think that this should have place in the application guide. And I'm actually surprised to see these are high level agreements items. Thank you.
So thanks, Martin. Are you, I'm just trying to get my hands around that. So I think you're referring to the voluntary picks adding something like a global, a block or something like that. Is that what your comment is relating to as well? Martin, please.
Yes, not only as we are presented now, but as the way we are creating this tool.
Okay, thanks, Martin. If it wasn't through, I guess the question I have is then if we don't have something like PICS, whether mandatory or voluntary, how do we address the concerns that are raised by the community? And it could be even the NCSG that raises concerns through public comments or through objections. So what is another mechanism or an alternative that we could employ? Martin, please.
Of course, I don't have a specific answer to this on what should we do, but I know what we shouldn't do. And we shouldn't be creating a tool that could be used to regulate content. That would be the end of ICANN. And also just the idea of having a policy-like behavior that is outside PDPs is also very troubling. That's just my piece.
Okay, thank you, Martin. Christopher, please.
Thank you, Christopher Wilkinson again, unmuted this time. Thank you. Look, Jeff, I understand the issue that Martin has described, but I would ask the board to take this into consideration, because if ICANN does not have any policy on content that extends at least to trademark abuse and to abusive content, ultimately ICANN gets into real trouble, real difficulties, and denial of competence will not be sufficient. So at some juncture, and this is not for me and probably not for this PDP, but at some juncture, the board will have to decide to what extent they're going to accept some responsibility for the abuses that may or may not occur. We've seen this with other large internet corporations quite recently. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Christopher. So I think that really is the issue we grapple with. And so while we understand the concerns expressed by the non-commercial stakeholder group, there does need to be a way to address concerns with an application so that an application can move forward, whether that's a result of GAC advice, GAC early warnings, public comments in general, or even an objection. So provided that, you know, there is public comment on what is proposed to be added and, you know, some consideration of those public comments, I think most of the community does agree that this is the way forward, but just seeing if anyone has their hand raised. Okay, Robin, please.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, thanks.
Okay, great. Yeah, I just typed this in the chat box as well, but for the benefit of those who aren't in front of that, I just wanted to agree with Martin and talk about just sort of the broad principle of creating public interest commitments and what they do to the bottom-up PDP process. In a sense, they sort of create a disincentive to participate in the bottom-up PDP process if you can just lobby the board to get a pick at the end of the process. So the idea is to try to create a process that encourages bringing concerns to the PDP early on and having them aired out in the PDP process early on rather than waiting until the end and trying to simply just go to the board to get a pick. So that's really the idea, the concern that we have, and it isn't only with respect to some of them, but it's with the concept of picks generally. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Anne, please.
Thank you, Jeff. It's Anne for the transcript. And I see exactly what Martin and Robin are saying. I don't think that we want our policy process hindered by, you know, that. But it does appear that with the board developing, as Aubrey says, a kind of a white paper on the topic of global public interest, which they're really sort of bound by with the bylaws and the articles, that there will be a point where the, you know, whatever we're recommending gets evaluated from the board standpoint based on its fiduciary responsibility. So there will be an interplay at some point in time. Second comment was on this specific topic of mandatory picks versus voluntary picks. I'm wondering if we as a PDP need to look a little bit at the types, because you raised the issue of types of GTLD applications when you're talking about sensitive and regulated strings, and then, you know, we have a whole section later on verified strings. It kind of seems as though mandatory picks, if there were a way to make that very general with respect to verified strings, so that, you know, that for example, there'd be a mandatory pick that said that, you know, the minimum qualifications to be, you know, categorized for eligibility, you know, have to be proven with you know, documentation, and that could, is there a way for us as a working group to recommend that on a verified TLD that certain picks are mandatory for that TLD that could be described in a general way?
Yeah, thanks, Anne. So on that point, I think the issue is not putting picks on verified TLDs; it's putting picks on sensitive strings to make sure that they are verified or validated TLDs. I think it's related. But if someone's committing to be a verified TLD, then they've already, in theory, committed to implementing certain commitments. I think the GAC provided advice on top-level domains that in their view should be some sort of verified TLD in some way, and then put picks in place. But so we should be discussing, you know, whether we agree that there should be this distinction between category one TLDs, the sensitive strings, or not, thereby requiring some form of contractual commitments, whether it's in the form of a pick. So we will or can be discussing and should be discussing that. On Robin's point, so we're going through this now, and we're hopefully trying to solve the issues of the types of picks through a PDP that we can foresee. I think the issue is that there will invariably be future applications that no one predicted that may raise some sort of issue that needs to be dealt with, and to go and just say now that we need to deal with all issues through a PDP as opposed through some sort of comment process, I think is kind of a burden, not just for the applicant, but it's a burden for, or could be a burden for the GNSO and or the community. So that's just kind of in my head, if we don't go along with this voluntary picks to address concerns that are raised, and then we say that everything has to be through a PDP, I think we're going to get into an unreasonable, unruly kind of process where now we got to start PDPs on 100 different applications because concerns were raised that we didn't anticipate. So Robin, your hand's up if you want to respond to that. Okay. So just something to think about. So we certainly have the NCSG that is not in agreement with this at this point, unless there are other organizations or disagreement, then that would seemingly be something for a minority report if that turns out to be the case. Okay, moving down to...
Wait, Jeff, this is Kathy Kleiman. Raise my hand.
Oh, sorry. Okay, Kathy, please.
Hi, I'm joining you late, and I apologize. But here we have a real situation in which the non-commercial stakeholder group, an entire stakeholder group, and not just that, you've heard, as you know, from the Electronic Frontier Foundation and other members of the traditional public interest community and digital rights community, that voluntary picks are a real problem. And Robin suggested a way, a procedure forward that seems to make sense if I came in at the right point. Do we just put this aside as a minority? This is, voluntary picks were not consensus policy. They were entered, I assume you went through the history, that these were a real problem. The kitchen sink was thrown in. They cover things way outside of ICANN's mission and mandate. So I assume within the scope of this discussion, we are going to limit what can be done and under what circumstances they can be done and how the public is informed, or are we just going to continue to let everybody throw anything they want in? Apologies if this has already been covered. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. So we covered the notion of when picks were appropriate, which included in response to public comments, objections, GAC advice, GAC early warnings, et cetera. We covered the fact that there's high level agreement to put them out for public comment and consideration of those comments. The solution that was offered by Robin of starting a PDP on each of the picks, the voluntary picks, I had just brought up that might be not the easiest solution to carry out and certainly would not be predictable and certainly would be a lengthy process. And I'm not sure the GNSO could even do that for every single pick. But what I'm really looking for is some sort of alternate then. And it's one thing to say that we don't like voluntary picks and we have issues with them, but what we've not heard is an alternative proposal to address public comments or to address the GAC advice or warnings or objections or all that stuff. And we really, if we're going to do away with PICs, we need something else to be in its place that is workable and feasible.
So have you talked about boundaries, like not putting in a PIC that's content regulation, or not going above and beyond the consensus policies? And not doing things like banning proxy privacy services when there is a consensus policy on that. What are the boundaries of PICs so that people don't have to police the entire world if they go out to public comment? Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. We have not had a discussion on the boundaries, but it seems like you've added something that is certainly worth discussing. Should, and I like that question. So should we, sorry, it's a phone there. Should we add a restriction on picks that would go against consensus policies? It seems to me that that might make sense, but let's see from the group if that's something that is supported. And on the other point, on the content point, I think that's a difficult one, Kathy, because even the one, and I know you were in favor of it, right? The one that said no closed generics, that was a content-based pick that was added after the process, and that was addressing a lot of concerns that were raised. If we said,
are we revisiting the mandatory picks, Jeff? That's a mandatory pick. Are we revisiting the mandatory picks or just talking about the voluntary picks? Sorry.
Right, but that was mandatory after the public comment process. So it was made mandatory, but it was during the process where the picks were created to address concerns. So then I'm not so sure what the distinction is between voluntary or mandatory. And so it'd be interesting to get your definition of that, Kathy, after I go to Donna.
Okay.
Please, cool. Donna.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. I'm just trying to understand this from a conceptual point. So there's a, it is possible that registry operator may have chosen to go beyond what is within the remit of ICAMP for business model differentiation purposes. With consensus policy, it's a little bit trickier, but so long as you're not contravening the consensus policy, I don't see why there's a problem with it. So, you know, we need to be careful here that we're not taking away an opportunity for a registry operator to differentiate with their business model. So if their voluntary pick is intended to provide some kind of, I can't think of the word, but for the intended registrant, you know, like it's similar to a verified TLD, although that's a little bit different. We need to be careful that we're not closing out that kind of, you know, business model differentiation ability for the registry.
Sorry, sorry, it took me a second there. Thanks, Donna. I have Kathy, and then I know, Martin, you're next with your hand up, but Kathy, I promised Kathy an opportunity. So Kathy, and then...
Nope, let Martin go next, please. Thanks.
Okay, Martin, please.
Thank you, Kathy, for that. Just a brief comment. I don't agree with Donna. I think that, yes, of course, we need to... provide as much diversity options to the business to develop, but you're talking something much more core here. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Martin. Kathy, you wanna get in as well now?
Yeah, so Donna, I see what you're talking about in terms of differentiation. I wanted to read to you, and I hope it hasn't been read already, from the NCSG comments, which are based on a lot of research on voluntary picks, and how do we get what you want, Donna, without doing what we see here, which we think really takes ICANN out of its mission. So the voluntary picks have allowed new GTLD registries, and of course we're talking about 2012, to throw in the kitchen sink into their applications, including the absurdity of content regulation outside the scope of ICANN's mission and mandate, B, additional trademark protections above and beyond the many rights protection mechanisms created for the new GTLD program via the community process, C, banning of proxy and privacy services, even though they're fully part of the consensus process, and D, deletions of domain names entirely without due process, and work with law enforcement outside of law and due process. So how do we prevent those and still allow that differentiation of business models? Part of the problem here, Jeff, as you know, of course we should ban things that have been created by the consensus policy, but we also have to keep ICANN in its mission and mandate, including within the PIC DRP and within the scope of these PICs. So how do we balance both? Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. So just going to the chat, and then I'll get to Susan. Seems to be some discussion on, Robin said if we can establish boundaries, that may be something worth considering. Some agreement with Donna, some agreement with for Kathy. Okay, Susan, please.
Yeah, hi, Susan Payne here. That your comments, Kathy, raised some really interesting points, and you finished it off by saying, how do we ban all of those? And I think my answer to that would be, we don't ban all of those, and indeed it seems inappropriate to do so. There might be some potential sort of voluntary restrictions or voluntary picks that one would feel are inappropriate and shouldn't be included and shouldn't be permitted. You know, for example, something that positively ran contrary to some kind of consensus policy. But a number of those examples that you identified, I don't think do that. I mean, if we take the rights protection one just as an example, really, why is there an objection to a particular registry feeling that they want to go above and beyond the minimum that was always identified as being a minimum, you know, a floor and not a ceiling? And if a registry operator wants to ensure that purchasers of names in their space are held to a higher standard, what is the objection to that? After all, there's no one telling registrants that they have to buy a name in that particular TLD versus some other TLD which perhaps suits their purposes better. So I think my answer to your question would be, I don't think we do want to ban all of those, but what we do want to do is identify the things that should be banned, to use your terminology.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Susan. I see Martin's hands up again, so let me go to Martin for a quick response.
Hi, thank you very much, Jeff. Susan, to answer your comment, I think the problem with the high standards is it's a slippery slope for censorship. It's really not that easy to say what that high standard should be and how it will be applied in each case. That's what we are fearing, not for the best case scenario, but for how easy it is to abuse it. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Martin. So, I mean, it sounds like we're still at a place where, you know, there's disagreement from the NCSG and public interest groups that submitted comments. Let me go to Donna, then Kathy.
Thanks, Jeff. Donna Austin from Newstar. So I think one of the things we potentially saw with the 2012 round is some registry operators, and this is before contracting. So when the GAC advice came out, there was possibly, and I don't know this for sure, but possibly some applicants were offering up voluntary picks to make their application look more agreeable than maybe another applicant, so that there was that differentiation. But I guess at the end of the day, I'm not sure that came in to part of the evaluation process. So I'm not 100% sure of the timing here. So I think if voluntary picks are being used, this is really hard, because I in my mind, I'm starting to think about when does this matter? So can you add, and I'm not sure of the timing on this either, whether you can add a voluntary pick at the time of negotiating your contract with ICANN, or whether those voluntary picks actually have to be identified at the time you submit your application. So I'm getting a little bit confused here, because I think it depends on what time in the process we're talking about this, and I'm not 100% sure that voluntary picks were required with the application themselves. That was something that came as GAC advice, so they were submitted later.
Yeah, thanks, Donna. And I switched connections to a phone line because I was having some internet issues. So hopefully everyone could still hear me. I think there's some good comments, and I know Kathy and Christopher have their hands up, but let me just go to the chat because I think there's some good comments that have been put in there in the last few minutes. And I think one of them is really just kind of what Donna was saying, that voluntary picks is not about, or are not about, what someone's putting into their application necessarily. In most cases, they were in response to some advice or some sort of concerns that were expressed, as Christine says, an outcry from the community. So, again, I'll ask the question of, how do we allow changes to applications that stem from those concerns that are expressed? So let me go to Kathy and then Christopher.
Great. Thanks, Jeff. And my recollection is the same as yours. The voluntary picks were not submitted with the original applications. They were put in later. To Christine's comment in the chat, not all of them were in response to public outcries. Maybe they were in response to small outcries or small private lobbying. That's where I get it. Some of them were, and I understand that there are people who want to leave room for some voluntary picks in response to GAC warnings and objections. But how do we set the right boundary? And a lot of these picks came in as things that people wanted that were rejected by the consensus process and by the policymaking process, since a lot of the RPMs are not consensus. The DPML, for example, was largely a rejected policy. And some of this idea of takedowns without due process, we never even talked about that because that's not what we do in ICANN. We don't take down things because of content. So I think policing the boundary has a lot to do with staying within ICANN's mission, and particularly ICANN's mission section 1.1, which is that we don't do content. Let me throw that out. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Kathy. And let me just, as of course, Kathy, you know, because you're one of the co-chairs, I'm going to refer all the rights protection questions, including the ones as to what should be mandatory or what may be added additionally, to the RPM group, because I believe that's within that group's purview. We could spend a lot of time talking about that here, but I think the most appropriate group there is the RPM group, and probably, and certainly not probably, has much more expertise than we do in this group to discuss those issues. But to the extent that, the comments raised about going against a consensus policy, that seems to be very relevant, or picks that, so I'm trying to think of how to classify this, because there's the takedown of names, Kathy, that you brought up, but that's part of a mandatory pick. If in relation to anything, that's actually how compliance, ICANN compliance, has been interpreting 11.3b, that action should be taken to address security threats and abuse. And so that doesn't really seem to be a voluntary pick issue, but more of a mandatory pick issue. But Kathy says in the chat, it's a standard-based registry agreement. and the voluntary donuts and others went beyond. So now we're talking more about the block list than that. Okay. Let's see. We have Christopher, I think, is next in the queue because I think Kathy went, but I might be forgetting. Yes, Christopher, please.
Hello, Christopher Wilkinson again. Jeff, as Donna said, this is really hard, and I don't think we're all fully prepared for it. Personally, I feel very familiar with all these issues at the second level, having dealt with that in several contexts, including the .eu URID board. But extending that experience to the top level is really hard. I think we need a working paper from the staff which would map out the issues and the level at which they should be applied. At the present level of the discussion, without commitment and reserving the right to change my mind, I would say at the very least we need from ICANN a superset of picks that are generally applicable. It might be quite a narrow superset, but we would need it, particularly as it needs to be applicable globally. Picking and choosing, sorry for the pun, picking and choosing bits of picks for different registries is all right at the low level where you're talking about exactly how a particular top level domain will function. That's okay, but there are, as I've said, a superset of picks, obligatory picks, non-voluntary picks, which I think should be defined for the program as a whole. But that's just part of a possible solution. My main proposal is that we need a staff paper that sets this all out, not only for the people on this call, but for the PDP and the community as a whole. Thank you.
Thanks, Christopher. Yes, no doubt this is one of the tougher issues and something that we all need to kind of go back and do some more reading on. I do want to get through a couple more things before we go into just a discussion on ICANN 65. So staff, if you could just let me know in 5 minutes, just give me a kind of a nudge to move on. Let me go with Maxime and then hopefully quickly and then move on.
Maxime, also for the transcript purposes. Actually, I don't see a reason why we should replace the policies work of registries, because different registries are different forms of legal bodies. Sometimes they can have shares, they can be non-for-profit, they can be municipal entities. There are different ideas, and it creates huge spectrum of different policies. We shouldn't substitute the work of all registry, because effectively we have less people than they have to do this work. And we don't have time to imagine every kind of unimaginable ideas on the planet. So I strongly object to a situation where we will ask the staff to create a set of policies for all imaginable registries. It's just loss of time. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Maxim. Let me jump to the, I think we've talked about the, if you look at the exemptions or waivers, I think we definitely talked about that issue, certainly in the context of single registrant TLDs. I want to scroll ahead a little bit because I think we've covered, if we can scroll on the screen there to keep going to page 4. Okay. We talked about the notion of, I want to just go to changes to the voluntary picks. So this is something that needs to be thought about. So we need to clarify whether language and draft in our recommendations is in reference to changes during the application process or after execution of the registry agreement. If it refers to changes after execution of the registry agreement, consider how to address the elapsed time between the initial GAC early warning, GAC advice, or objection and submission of the changes as circumstances may change. So that's something we need to think a little bit about for the final report. In addition, if we look at the next bullet point, Valdez made the point that if there's a voluntary pick that's filed in response to an objection, we should give the objector a limited time to decide whether to continue it, amend, or withdraw its objection. I think that makes a lot of sense in because of the fact that these picks could, in theory, deal with or get rid of an objection. And if it's withdrawn, there should be some consideration of some sort of refund of those objection fees. And the IPC states there must be an established process that allows for predictability and flexibility. Limitations and conditions of voluntary picks should be expressed beforehand, and any changes not foreseen at the time of inclusion commitment should be further addressed in a process that allows for public input. So this is about changes to picks at a later date. With respect to the public consultation bullet, public consultation and voluntary pick changes the nature of an application. We talked about this. As we said, most people support some sort of period to object or comment. The registries are one of the disagreements on there. They do not believe that you should reopen the objection period on the adoption of a voluntary pick because, the voluntary pick is being put into place to, in theory, address those public comments or objections that have already been raised. But the registries and the Valdez are... And so it's basically the registries that have filed comments that do not foresee opening up the public comment periods or objections, but that seems to be a minority of the views that have come in. Okay. I'm going to stop at the verified TLDs because I think that's a longer discussion and will also get us into the freedom of expression subject fairly well. So we'll save that for after ICANN. So why don't we, and I see, I'm just looking to make sure Trang is on the call, and she is. Okay, so changing gears a little bit to ICANN 65, there are four sessions of subsequent procedures, three of them on the first day on Monday, one of them on Tuesday. So the first two sessions are for work track 5, and there's already been some discussion and will continue to be discussion of what goes on at those two meetings. The third and fourth session, the one from 1:30 to 3, I believe, on Monday, and then the morning session on Tuesday, are reserved for the rest of the subsequent procedures working group. And the third session, I'm going to let Trang introduce what we'll be talking about the third session. And this is, I think, something that everyone will find some good amount of value in. So Trang, are you ready to give to let us know what's going to be talked about?
Hi, Jeff. Certainly. This is Trang. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you. Yes. So I wanted to, and of course, the formal communications will start to go out today. So many of you will start to see that as well. But just as a preview, what we have been doing is since January, at the board's request, ICANN.org has been briefing the board regarding the next rounds of new GTLDs and what's necessary to get there. And this briefing includes things such as status of review, status of the sub-pro PDP, the implementation of the 2012 round and the lessons learned from there, as well as our initial thinking on planning work that could be done. Clearly, if we are to start doing planning work now, there are a lot of unknowns. So if we're going to start, it's important to document any assumptions that we're making. And that's exactly what we've done. And we've shared those assumptions with the board. So now what we would like to do is share those same assumptions with the community, with the subsequent procedures PDP working group being one specific group that we would really love to share these assumptions with and get feedback from you on. And again, the goal in making these assumptions explicit at this point in time is really to surface any potential areas of misalignment and to allow for informed discussion on any assumptions that should be added or adjusted to help Icon Org continue to do the planning work moving forward. So that's what we're hoping to get some time with you on Monday afternoon in Marrakesh to do. And again, like I said, the formal communications will go out today. And with those formal communications, we'll include the set of assumptions that we'll be discussing with you in Marrakesh so that you can have a preview read so that you can be prepared to have those discussions in Marrakesh on Monday. So Jeff, I'll stop there and see if there are any questions.
Yeah, thanks, Trang. Martin has his hand up. Martin Silva, please.
Hi, thank you very much. Just a quick question. Are we still going to be debating these issues in Marrakesh? Because this is, I feel this is definitely not over. We do not have an agreement on this. And talking about implementation without an agreement just seems weird. So are we still going to be debating this in the face-to-face meeting?
Yeah, thanks, Martin. I don't believe we will be addressing this topic of PICs at the meeting. And certainly Trang and ICANN knows that there's certainly no agreement on certain subject areas. But as Trang was saying that and implying that we can't really wait for agreement on every single sub-issue before ICANN starts thinking about how to implement the program. So I think what they're doing makes a lot of sense since it's definitely a multi-year process. But of course, ultimately ICANN will have to consider whatever's in our consensus policy. So I think they're just trying to do a presentation on the assumptions that they're making and to validate those assumptions with the community so that they can start looking into things like, let's say, an RSP pre-approval program and how to set that up, and looking at systems to have in place to submit an application and to allow for an objection process and consultants to start working with in order to think about how to evaluate. So I think everything is this is all going to be a multi-year process, and like what happened in 2012, ICANN actually started, quote, implementation work in 2008, if not earlier. So I think what they're doing here is smart, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Let me go to Jim. Jim, are you there?
All right, let's try that. Does that work?
That does. Thank you.
All right. Sorry about that. Jim Prendergast for the record. Trang, it's going to be helpful to have that material ahead of time so folks can dig into it and then come prepared with questions instead of reacting on the fly. Jeff, do you know if we're going to get the materials for the stuff that we're going to cover during the other sessions ahead of time as well? I think we started that practice last ICANN meeting, and I think it kind of helped people prepare for the actual in-person meetings. Thanks.
Yeah, so we'll certainly get to you the list of topics that we addressed at the second session out in advance, along with what to review for that discussion before people leave unless you leave today. Hopefully, assuming you leave Wednesday or later, you'll get the yes, you'll get some materials. Okay. So thank you, Trang, and I think it should be an interesting discussion. I have not seen this document yet either, so I'm looking forward to reading that document and discussing this with the group and ultimately with the community. Okay, and then on that, any other questions? Let me just take a look here. Nope. All right, and then on the second session, that will be reserved for a couple of topics. We wanted to see how far we got on this topic to before we finalize with the leadership team what topics we're going to discuss at the Tuesday morning session for SubPro. We want to pick topics that will be engaging and not just ones where you'll hear either myself or Cheryl speak the whole time. So we're trying to try to balance that with certain topics. So we will also be trying to break out into small groups during that session, though we are still trying to figure out whether remote participation or how remote participation will be handled with doing something like breakout groups at this Mayor Cash meeting. But we think it just encourages much more conversation if we can break out into smaller groups and then have people report back on what the groups have discussed. So that's something we'd like to do, but still trying to verify whether we can do something like that with remote participation. Any other questions on ICANN? Okay. So on the very last, and before everyone has to drop, is post-ICANN 65 work plan. As a leadership team, we did discuss some of the concerns that were raised on the call about going to two meetings a week, but on balance, we decided that we're still going to move ahead with it to try it out and see what happens and hopefully get some additional participation via the mailing list. As you can see, discussions often take a lot longer than we anticipate and or that we'd like to. We don't want to cut off discussion, and therefore, in order to stay on some semi-reasonable time frame, going to two meetings a week does seem like the best thing we can do at this point of time, because we don't want to cut off conversations, and at the same time, we don't want this to go on for an additional several months after when we had promised the GNSO Council we would get this done. I know that's not popular with everybody, but I think it's something we as a leadership team have made a decision to try and see how it works out. Kathy, I know your hand is up, so if you can just be brief, thank you.
Sure, this is Kathy. And just continuing my objections, that times have already been published for the summer, if I remember correctly, and we've been working with them, and that's a lot of, it's a lot of time that you're asking for people who are not employed to be in this area. You're asking for a lot of time from volunteers. So I'd like to continue my objection to two meetings a week and 3 hours, and what that does also to the people in Work Track 5, which I think makes it four and a half hours a week. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Kathy. We totally understand, but it's something we're going to try out and see what happens. All right. Any last questions and or comments?
Hi, this is Greg Chatton. I'm on audio only. Could I get in the queue, please?
Sure.
Just very briefly, I think if people were to be succinct and stay on topic and not make the same presentation over and over again, we might be able to do one meeting a week, but given the desire to let people air things out, that's with the second meeting. That's why we have two meetings a week. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. Okay. Thank you, everyone. I don't want to keep everyone over time. So I look forward to seeing everyone that's going to ICANN 65. And of course, there will be remote participation. So thank you, everyone. I look forward to talking later this Well, I'll see the beginning of next week. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thank you. Meeting has been adjourned. Have a great day, everyone.